Hello and welcome to another comedian's interview for my blog and podcast, A Rich Comic Life. My name is Richard Gill and my blog describes my experiences of watching over 1,000 comedians and counting for nearly 50 years. My guest today is the wonderful comedian. It's Alexandra Haddo. Yeah!
Thank you so much for having me. That's a nicer reception than some gigs.
How are you? You all right?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited.
It's lovely to see you and thank you so much. The interview is going to be about 45 minutes to an hour. And we're going to go right back to the start. And if you can tell me, please, how did you become a comedian in the first place?
I love telling this story, actually. It was through a friend of mine who was a comedian. He was a stand-up comedian. He's now a writer for a lot of TV shows. His name's James Farmer. He's brilliant. And I was just pals with him. Yeah, we used to kind of, you know, bounce script ideas off each other. But I didn't work in comedy or anything like that. And he said, oh, you should do stand-up. And I was like, absolutely not, you know, because I was such a huge stand-up fan that, you know, if when you're that in awe of something and you've, yeah, you know, you've not got any background in it whatsoever. I mean, I did like a bit of performing arts when I was a kid, but I'm not from like a performance background, you know. He said, you should do it. And I was like, oh my God, you know, I couldn't think of anything more nerve-wracking and stuff. And he said, well, I'll tell you what, why don't you write me 5 minutes of, you know, what you would say if you were going to do a gig. And I thought, well, that's quite a fun exercise, you know. So I did that and then I gave it to him and he said, this is great. And it's a good job that it is because I've booked you on to do a spot tomorrow night at the Cavendish Arms.
Wow.
Yeah. So he Brilliant. Tricked me. Yeah. My friend tricked me into what's now my life's passion and job.
Brilliant.
So yeah, so I did my first gig and I didn't tell anyone I was doing it. I didn't tell anyone apart from my best friend and James, obviously, because he was the one that sort of organised it, and they came with me. And I did it, and I had quite a good, you know, first gig. It wasn't like a horror story at all. It was amazing, you know, and I had such a buzz, and I called my dad and told him that I did it on the way home, stuff like that.
Oh, brilliant.
And then, I know, it was amazing, honestly, it was great. But the weird thing is, then the next week, I was going to go back and do it again. And, you know, when you start out, you need a bringer and there's quite a lot of bringer gigs where you have to bring someone to a gig to kind of make the audience, you know, pack out a bit. And James wasn't free that night. And I went to the Cavendish Arms and I remember being sat there. I mean, not only they are quite strict with, you know, you have to bring somebody. I'm sure I could have asked somebody else, but I didn't have the confidence at the time to do it in front of anybody else after one gig. And so I didn't do it again. I didn't gig again for about 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I just sort of thought, oh, I've ticked that off. That's nice kind of thing.
So when was the first gig?
The very first gig was probably 2014, I think.
Right. So it took you till 2016 to go again.
Yeah. I think it was 20. Yeah, it must be 2014. I'm just trying to work it out now. Yeah, I think that's right. And I think I did one in those 2 years, you know. And then I went away. My granddad passed away, and I got a couple of grand, basically. It's fine. I mean, he was very old. Yeah. I got a couple of grand, you know, when he passed away. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to go away on my own for like 2 months. And I did the sort of classic sort of cliche. I've never had a chance to, you know, go traveling or anything like that. And I went away for 2 months and I just realized that I was quite not bored in my job, but I knew that it wasn't, you know, what I wanted to do. And I kind of didn't really know what to do. And by the end of it, I was like, you know what? And I met a really nice group of people out there. And I told them that I'd done a couple of stand-up gigs before and they were like, you should do it, you know. And I worked in this restaurant and they were always saying, you know, you should give it a go and stuff like that. So I came back and I remember writing in my diary, you know, like try and do 3 gigs a month. And now, you know, I mean, I'm gigging later tonight. Like it's always, you know what I mean? I gig 3 times in a night sometimes now. It's mad.
That's brilliant. That's such
yeah,
a good
so Yeah, so then I came back, did a gig, and then just from then on, like sort of just so I still say I've only been going like 5.5 years. Maybe it was 2017. I don't know, whichever one it was. But
Yeah.
yeah, so since then I've just been hammering it basically. Well, you get addicted, don't you? So.
I know the Cavendish Arms very well. I used to know the resident compere, Brendan O'Donoghue, who's been on this podcast going really well. Very funny man.
Oh, he's brilliant.
Yeah, very funny. And I used to go there, and I used to go to Birdie's on the
Yes,
Strand
I did
with
that.
Jimmy Bird, and then Brendan was the resident MC, and I would be that 5 minute friend. So I would go along.
Oh, brilliant.
Got a lot of comedians with the
Yeah. Oh, do you know what? Honestly, you're a lifesaver for people starting out, because it's so nice of people to give up their time to come along with
I
us,
absolutely love
especially when
it.
you're starting out,
Yeah.
the way you might not be necessarily great, but it's great. I love that. My friends were actually quite supportive when I started. I was always okay for bringers, which was so nice of them,
That's
but then
great.
I think the key is kind of befriend someone that runs a bringer gig so that sometimes you can get away with not bringing one.
Well, I it's very kind of you to say, because that's a reason why the blog exists. I don't only support established acts, I support up and coming acts
Of
as well.
course, yeah.
Having seen so many over the years, I've become very astute at what I believe is a very good lineup of comedy acts. So if you
Yeah.
wanted to go to the Comedy Store or something like that, I believe I could pick a very
Oh,
good
definitely.
list, because I've seen so many of them. But some of the up and coming ones, one of the other great things about the blog is watching the comedians develop. I first saw Harry Hill, for example, 30 years ago, just as he was starting
No way.
downstairs at the King's Head, and he's just one example of many. And he ran onto the stage. He was late for the show. He brushed his knee, stood up onto the stage, and went, "Ladies and gentlemen, I'm really sorry I'm late. I had to have a testicle brought down." And that got a laugh. And then he said, "From Derby," and to and to this day, it's the best opening line I've ever heard. And when I met him 30 years later, he went, "Oh yeah, Rich," he said, "I still tell that in my routine."
That's amazing. I
It's
love that.
fantastic. And of course, the memories of watching them all as well. It's so good. Did you ever find it difficult at all, breaking through into comedy? Did you ever have difficulty getting gigs or anything like that?
I feel like I didn't like when I mean, I remember the days of, emailing everybody and that sort of thing. But I was quite lucky that I did the Boogaloo as one of my first ones, Big Nose
Yeah.
Comedy, David Lewis running it, who's still a good friend. He's a guy. And I went there and I sort of got on with David really well straight away. And I kind of always, almost always had a spot there every Thursday. And to have almost like a guaranteed weekly gig early on doesn't sound like a lot now because I gig so much, but it was nice to kind of always have that spot. Even if I managed to get one other that week, you're starting out, you've got two a week, that kind of thing. And then, I remember Matt Hutchinson, who was also kind of doing Big Nose, asked me to do like a spot on his compilation show at the Fringe. And I was just like, I felt like I was, Mickey Flanagan opening Wembley Arena or something. Like, I was like, I can't believe I'm going to be on at the Fringe, like, as if it was like my own show. But
Good for
and do you know what?
you.
That my first ever spot at the Fringe was that, and I got the time wrong by an hour, and I had to leg it. And I honestly legged it in, legged it into the venue as he was saying, "Please welcome to the stage, Alexandra Haddo." And I got on
Wow.
there. I know, and I think that was my first ever death. I mean, full on stage death.
Wow.
Like they, yeah. I think just I wasn't. I wasn't prepared because I was panicking about the time.
Yeah.
So yeah, lesson learned. Always double check your gigs.
I've always said to a lot of the comedians, and there's been a lot on the on the podcast,
Yeah.
I would guess it's all about experience. I think in order to have a bad gig, it makes you a better comedian. Would you
Oh
agree?
yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think there's definitely scope for both types of gig, definitely, because I play the Bill Murray a lot in London, which is
Yeah.
my favorite place to
Yeah.
play. It's I mean, now I'm saying this, touch wood, I'm saying I've never had a bad gig there. I always feel electric on stage there. But and people say, oh, it's not, it's not really teaching you much though. And you think, I do actually enjoy this job, like you're allowed to have both. But it is true, you're right. Like that, then you go to the gigs. I often find outside London is a big learning curve that everybody should do. And I think that's what you're talking about, that's quite interesting. You can
Yeah.
take your jokes to, the middle of Yorkshire or something, and people will be like, what? And that kind of teaches you how to adapt on
Yeah.
stage, or how to
Yeah.
adapt material, or how to write for a wider audience. So then you can sort of pick and choose as you go along. But yeah, I do think difficult gigs are essential, because otherwise, yeah, you're never really going to improve, because you never got to question yourself at a good gig,
Yeah, I would never. I can never imagine you having a bad gig because you're always so enthusiastic when I saw you on stage. And so as soon as you go on stage, you've got
Yeah.
the audience and you can say what you like, and that's half of it because you're very endearing on stage. Would you agree?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, I empathy a lot, and I think that's a
Yeah.
great skill to have as well. I think that improves you as a comedian. And yeah, I've not had many, full-on deaths. And I find that as an MC, it's more difficult to die. Not that you're trying to, but like, you can always kind of bring it. I'm quite good at chatting to people, like
Yeah.
even in a difficult gig. Whereas doing a set at a tough gig, I find way tougher, because if the MC's already done quite a lot of crowd work, you can't really go into that. And anyway, you don't want you kind of want to work through your set. You kind of want to get them. But yeah, no, I have had tough gigs. But yeah, I'm very upbeat, so it's I don't let it get me down, really.
No, never, never. Keep going, keep
Yeah.
going. That's the key to it.
Yeah.
It's interesting because my home city is Carlisle,
Oh, right, yeah.
but I've been living and working in London for half my life, 30 years. But
Yeah.
I go back to Carlisle. I've still got lots of friends up there, and certainly over the years, the comedy scene in Carlisle has grown. They've got the
Yeah.
old fire station, they've got the Sands Centre, so lots of up and coming comedians tend to play
Yeah.
there. But it is true what you say about testing a joke in different parts of the country, because
Yeah.
I do go and see acts there as well as here, and you can tell that the audience, you can tell the different
Yeah.
audiences. You know, it's
It's amazing.
yeah,
It's
it's
weird you
it.
say Carlisle as well, because I was talking to a woman this weekend. I was at Shine On Festival at
Oh,
a
yeah.
comedy tent. And this woman was saying she saw, I won't name the act because she was talking about how he didn't do well in Carlisle, but she said that she saw him at the Fringe and he was a brilliant and amazing and smashed it. And then she booked tickets for him in Carlisle. And she said she still really enjoyed him, but it was interesting, the different audience, because he just bombed for like the whole hour.
That's
And she said it
amazing.
was, I felt so bad for him, that,
That's
but
amazing.
again,
It's the it's
yeah.
the It's the famous Ken Dodd story where he talks about the history of laughter, and he uses Freud as an example, and he goes into this elongated line about how laughter works and everything. And Freud
Yeah.
said this, and Freud did that. Mind you, ladies and gentlemen, Freud didn't play the Glasgow Empire on a Friday night.
Yeah,
Similar thing, you know.
exactly.
So they
He is
must know
completely
every
right.
audience is
Yeah.
quite different. So it's fascinating. It's fascinating. What do you like to talk about on stage? Do you have any specific themes or anything like that?
Do you know what? For a few, for the first sort of few years of my career, and up until fairly recently, I've always done stuff that is based in truth. I'm talking about something that's happened to me in a relationship or in a friendship or in my life. And then, you know, then you're kind of expanding on it, or you're going into a bit, or you're doing an act out or something like that. But recently I've tried to do a little bit more sort of political stuff and stuff about class and stuff like that, just because, just to make it more interesting for me and more interesting for the audiences. And like you say, if an audience isn't going for something, if you've only got that, you know, it's difficult to sort of guide them somewhere else and see if you can get them. So I'm trying to kind of expand on what I talk about now, but I find it difficult to write about more abstract stuff in a stand-up setting. Like I'm on Twitter quite a lot, and all of my stuff there is a lot more political, is a lot more kind of, you know, I mean, I'm not alone in hating the government, but, you know, I'm quite into politics. I keep up with it, stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, exactly, yeah. And it's, I've done a bit of political stuff recently, and it goes down well, but I feel like there is that sense that, you know, people have come to a comedy show to kind of like shut their mind off from that a little bit. Yeah. So you can't, I do think I can do too much of it, because it becomes, even if it's funny, I think they, people kind of think, oh, I don't want to think, you know, because it, things are so dire at the moment, it's almost like, unless you've got an absolute banger of an angle or a joke, you know, people kind of want to hear about a funny sex story instead, you know, they want to like take their mind, you know, like, So I'm trying to write about different stuff now. But yeah, I'm fascinated by relationships and dating, and it's, you know, it's a lot of people talk about it, but because it's interesting.
Yeah,
know,
yeah, because exactly. It's like very much so.
Sort of a mystery, yeah, all the time. But I love talking about that. I do. I think it's great.
And following on from that, how do you remember all your routines? Do you write things down? You have a notebook, you write things down on your hand?
Yeah, I when I'm first writing out ideas, I have to write them out by hand. I never type them, because I find it goes in easier if I've written them. And yeah. I write it out as like exactly as I would say it the first time. Which I think is probably a bad thing, because you probably stick to that a bit too much when you're doing new material. But yeah, I write it out in my hand. I sort of test it out. You know, I'm doing a new material night later tonight, you know, that sort of thing. And then whenever I do new material, not only are the jokes double the length they need to be, for one thing, because you're sort of padding it out with you know, your apologetic language to people, like, sorry, I'm just trying this out. I'm so bad at it. I'm so bad at the first time I say anything on stage, it's so nerve-wracking. Even now, you know, you've been going for years and you think this is quite a good idea, and then you think, is it? You know?
The reason why I asked the question is that most creative thing I've done other than this blog, you see the poster right behind me, I wrote a play for Comic Relief called The Applicant, which featured me and my friend. My friend is very good at accents, and it was all about me. And it was basically about, I had a successful girlfriend in London. And I was coming down to London from Carlisle, and I never had a job. I'd never had an interview in my life. So each scene was me going for a different job.
Amazing. Yeah.
I would write a monologue, and then the interview, and a monologue, and the interview. My friend paid all the interviewees, and it was just massive. By the end of it, there is a lot of plot, but by the end of it, it is a comedy. But I get my ideal job. I get given my ideal job, and then the interviewer kills me.
No.
So the next scene is me at the gates of heaven or hell, being interviewed by God, deciding whether or not I should interview corpses for heaven or hell.
Oh my God, that's brilliant!
I shrugged my shoulders, and that was it. So there I was. I'd written all this stuff, and we rehearsed it. And the first night we did one of three shows. First night I ran out and I completely forgot my monologue that I'd written. I was like a rabbit in headlights. I was gutted.
Oh no!
And what was interesting was As soon as a prop came on my friend came on, I never missed a beat again, and I got all the laps and everything. The next two shows were perfect. And originally I wrote it for the Edinburgh Fringe, who knows, but you know, never say never. But it was fascinating. And that's why I asked the question, because how do you remember it all as you're going along? Do you have things in pointers in your head?
It's like muscle memory for me, and I'm quite lucky in that I've always been quite good at remember, genuinely at just sort of like remembering things. And sometimes I write a word on my, if it's a new bit, you know, if there's like a few bits to a new bit. But I'm trying to phase that out for sort of big gigs. You know, when you're doing a longer set, sometimes it's almost like a placebo. It's like a sort of I'll just write the, you know, a keyword on my hand. But it's so funny because if somebody doesn't know you've just done a comedy gig and you're on the tube home or something and you've got like tits, blowjob, you know, Corbin written on your hand, people are like, what's going on? You know, like
that's brilliant.
But yeah, no, I've never really had a problem with that. I've just realized that I'm quite lucky to have that, really. It's when I'm starting out, I do forget, but I sort of muddle through and then I sort of structure the idea more. Do you know what I mean? And then I think,
sure.
okay,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think,
and I get
I
more
think,
confident. Yeah.
I think again, it's just all about experience. The more you do, the better you get at it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What's your view of comedy competitions? Do you think they're a good thing? Do you think they help a comic's career?
That is a very good question, and one I've never been asked before. I think
thank you.
I genuinely haven't. I haven't. It's so interesting because I think they are really helpful for people who are good in that medium.
Yeah.
I think there's absolutely a place for them because I think sometimes if you're, you know, if you don't live in London and you can't gig all the time, or a, you know, or a big city, it can sometimes sort of get you on people's radar quicker than it would do, you know, if you're emailing for spots all the time or if you're trying to break into something. And I think it's definitely, it's great for that. I've always been rubbish at them, at terrible.
I was going to say,
have
you've done many of them.
Yeah. I did. I did Leicester Square New Act two times or three times. And I got through to like the next round once, and I did Funny Women 1 year and got through to the next round and then out. And I think
well done.
That's it. But I've never been that bothered about them, and I've never done well in them. So I do think it's a certain, but like my friend Hubert Meyer, who I think you know as well, Austrian comedian,
very much so.
Fantastic comedian.
Very funny.
He's brilliant at them. Because his stuff is quite different, he's very dark, you know, he can kind of stand out, I think, and his jokes are, some of them are like longer bits, but a lot of them he can fit it into that short sort of competition window, if you know what I mean. Whereas I was always, because I've always, mine's sort of more storytelling, I was always so nervous about the time in a competition that I don't think I was ever as relaxed as I was in a normal gig. So it's sort of catch 22, and then I never really got through. And it was just, but he's brilliant. You know, I know people that they can seemingly sort of not really put a foot wrong, you know, with competitions. And I never did. But my housemate, Rich Spalding, actually, he, another great comedian. I don't know if you know him.
He is,
but he's fantastic.
Very much so.
Yeah. And he just, you know, got the Critics Award in the final of the, you know, the Beat the Frog World Series.
I read that.
You know.
Well done him.
And that's what I mean. And I think that's great because, you know, he's now got loads of paid spots in a club that perhaps he wouldn't have got booked in before. So I think it's a good way to get yourself on people's radar and to kind of hone your timing, I think, as well, because it's so kind of constrained and it's quite quick. I think it's definitely a skill, but it's one that I do not possess.
Do you suffer from any nerves before you go on stage, and how do you cope with them if you do?
I do sometimes. It depends on the gig. And
Yeah.
it's not always necessarily the size of the gig either. It's quite weird. I think it's if it's a gig where I'm on with, a lot bigger acts, I get nervous, or if the crowd seems not even intimidating, because I sort of see that as a challenge, but like sometimes if a crowd seems difficult and you're worried that you don't know how they're going to go for you, I get nervous. Or like yesterday, I was doing a massive gig at Shine On Festival, and the room was huge. I mean, we got in there and we thought, Jesus, this is it was like an aircraft hangar, and there was probably like, yeah, it was mad, it was mental. I thought it was going to be like in a little pub, and there was like 1500 seats, and I thought, oh
Wow.
God, if only 200 people come to this, which is still a great number, it's going to look empty, and actually there was like 1,000 people in there by the time I went on, and I was nervous for that, because it's a situation where you don't know how it's going to go down. It's a festival, people aren't there for comedy necessarily, but so many people were kind of, it was day three of the festival, they'd watched a lot of bands, they wanted a bit of a change, and it was great. Like I don't generally, as soon as I get the first laugh, I'm not nervous anymore. So, and I always try and second myself. Yeah.
I was just going to say, do you agree that as soon as you speak into the microphone, the nerves go?
Sort of, actually, yeah, they lessen as soon as you speak, and then as soon as I get the first laugh, I'm absolutely fine. Yeah, so
What's infamous, and I've told a lot of comedians this story as well, is
yeah.
I once had a go at stand-up comedy myself,
Yeah.
because I remembered all the jokes that the comedians would tell would make me laugh. I thought, I'll give this a go and see what it's like. And it, and
Yeah.
I was very nervous, and I went to I know a promoter who years ago used to put on gong shows, and
Yeah.
he had a gong show for old people, and I wrote this script out about me being very accident prone in Carlisle driving cars, and he loved it. And he said, "Right," he said, "you've got 3 minutes to go and entertain these people." It was a wet Monday afternoon; it couldn't be worse. And I
Oh
walked
God.
out. I walked out. There's three people in the audience. I walked out, and the first thing I said was, "Good afternoon, everybody. People think I look like Eddie the Eagle Edwards, the ski jumper, but I can't see the resemblance myself. And of course, I'm this double. I don't know."
Yeah.
One old bloke at the back just went, "Fuck off," and got me off. And I walked off to my own footsteps. And I said to the promoter, he said, "Have another go, another go." I said, "I don't know." I said, "I think my calling is sitting in the audience supporting all the people who can do this well."
Oh,
Never
that's a shame
say never
though.
again. But
Yeah. Fuck that
the
guy in the back of the thing.
nerves, the nerves, thank you. The nerves were palpable that day. And I do feel sorry when you have to walk out and
Yeah.
hopefully you're walking out to a massive round of applause because people are there and want to
Yeah.
see you. But as soon as you speak, if you're good at it like you are, it all goes away. The
I
nerves.
think half of the nerves is sort of, it's your nerves, and then the audience are nervous, and if you don't show you're nervous, they relax, you relax, and then the gig's great. It's almost like a little standoff, really, like mentally at the start of a gig.
Very much so. I totally agree
Yeah.
with
Yeah,
that.
and it's yeah, it's weird.
You were extremely impressive when I saw you recently at 21 Soho. You were
Oh, thank
you were
you.
absolutely hilarious. You did a brilliant 20-minute routine. Please, can you describe your writing process if you've got one, and where do you get your ideas from for a routine or a show?
It's usually, like I say, usually, something's happened to me, and it's even if it's usually the funnier it is at the time, the difficult, more difficult it is to sort of make into a routine. But it's usually, you know, I'm retelling the story at, you know, at the pub or to my friends or something like that. And I will add things in as I'm telling it, just because, you know, not to toot my own horn, but I mean, I'm a good storyteller, right? So I'm telling them that. And often then, as I'm saying that, I'm thinking, that's a good idea. Do you know what I mean? Like, as I'm saying it, and then I write like a trigger note in my phone. There was one I just said to my friend, and it became a bit of a bigger bit, but it still works as a one-liner, that I said to my friend, you know, once I went, I changed the sort of setting and stuff like that, but once when I was, my dad had to come down to London, you know, last minute or something, and couldn't get a hotel or whatever, and so I didn't have a sofa at the time. My friend was sort of staying in the living room, like between houses, and so my dad was like, well, we'll just have to share a bed. And my mate was like, oh, that's a bit weird, isn't it? And I sort of was retelling this to my friend, and I went, what's the insinuation is I'm going to sleep with my own dad if I share the bed, like as if that's what's been holding me back, like, do you know what I mean? And then that became a whole bit, because that is a thing,
yeah,
you know, that people, that it's the absurdity, it's like thinking about what they actually mean, what they're actually insinuating by that. And it's like, of course, it's not ideal to be sharing a bed with my dad, you know, when I'm 30 something, but it's also under very specific circumstances where there wasn't, do you know what I mean? There wasn't another option or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's
that's how the idea came about.
Yeah, exactly. And then I sort of wrote around that, and sort of built up why it had to happen, and then put a few jokes in the build. Yeah, that's kind of how I do it. And then sometimes I sort of sit down. I have to book a show in, because I need a deadline to write to. So what I do is I book a show in, or, you know, split hour or something like that. And then it makes me sit down and think, right. And it might be fruitless, you know, when I sit down on purpose to write. Sometimes I look at two pages of notes and I think, I've got maybe one joke in that. But that's yeah,
of course.
That's what it is, you know. and often sort of routine will start quite small, and, you know, and then you'll sort of add to it. Like, a lot of my ideas do start off as kind of sort of polarized, really, either a story that's sort of amusing but not really quite funny enough yet, or like a really funny one-liner that needs like a bit of a story around it, so that I have to eventually bring them into the middle. And that's how it works. So,
do you wake up in the middle of the night and with a bright idea and then have to write it down? Or,
you know what, I wish I did, because that always sounds really cool when people say that. I think, you know, like, I had to write it down or whatever. And but no, I never do that. Do you know why? Because I am the best sleeper on planet Earth. I am, like, even if I've had a stressful day or I'm anxious or whatever, I am like,
you will sleep,
head hit the pillow, yeah.
That's amazing.
Which I realize is a gift as the more I get older. Yeah,
very, very much so. Yeah, certainly for me. I'm 55 this year.
Yeah.
They're all laughter lines, and I need my let's move on. I'm very lucky every year to be able to go to the Edinburgh Fringe. That's my holiday.
Yeah.
And I go for a week and I see about 50 shows and I'm exhausted.
Oh, amazing.
Come back. But all my friends join me. It's the best experience going. What was your first Edinburgh Fringe like? What year was it? What were you doing?
The first time I went was around 2016, I think. I didn't go until then, just because I hadn't had the money or I was working or whatever. And I used to go to a lot of comedy shows here, you know, and I didn't really know as much about it as I should. I knew what it was and everything, but I just sort of, I don't know why it never crossed my mind to go earlier, but I went up with some friends. And we had a great time. And then we went for like the next 2 or 3 years. And then I think the third year was when I was doing that aforementioned terrible spot that for my friends ran in. And then I went up. Yeah. You were there, Rich. Yeah, it just kind of like grew incrementally, really, from that. I just couldn't believe, like, the first time I went, I just couldn't believe how amazing it was. You know, I was the same as you. I was seeing like shows a day, and the whole city is just sort of sparkling, you know. And it's for a comedy lover, it was just absolutely brilliant. Like, we saw so much stuff, and we saw so many people, like you say, that are now huge, and we saw them in tiny venues, and you know, it was great. I just couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my God, yeah.
There's something very special about it. As soon as you step off the train at Waverley, the atmosphere just hits you, and
Yeah,
you're in this amazing experience for a week or so. It's just it's
exactly.
extraordinary. I'm very, very lucky. When you did your first gigs there, have you built them up? Have you done like there's two or three of you doing an hour, or you've done 45 minutes or anything?
So I did like one spot that year. Then I went up the next year and did a few spots, you know, just on compilation shows. Then the following year, 2019, I did a split bill with Rich Spalding,
Brilliant.
called Sex Question Mark, which you can sort of see the poster of there next to my, sorry about that. Sorry about the
That's
pile of
brilliant.
on there, but sort of see it over there. We did a split bill called Sex Question Mark, which we wanted to do a split bill, but with a bit of a concept and a thread running through it, just so it wasn't like, here's half an hour of me and here's half an hour of him, you know. So we were platonic friends at the time. We still are, but that is relevant. We were platonic friends at the time, and we thought, what if we did, because a lot of our stuff was about relationships and sex and dating and stuff. I said, well, why don't we do, you know, a show where the sort of the gimmick is, we'll make the case for each of our sort of sexual pasts in the show, and then at the end, the audience can vote whether we should sleep with each other or not.
Wow,
So we had,
that
so we did like a sort of bit together on stage at the top that was sort of like loosely scripted every day. Then we did our sort of set pieces, and then we came on at the end, and the audience had cue cards on their seats, and they had to vote bone or home.
That's great.
Yeah.
What a good
And
idea.
now, Rich, I live with Rich and his girlfriend, because he met and fell in love with my housemate. So it was quite funny, because then we did, and then, yeah, I know. And then of course the pandemic hit, and so we didn't do
of
anything.
course.
2020, and but then 2021 we did a couple of shows at Camden Fringe. We did Wedding Question Mark, which was kind of a follow-on, and it was, but it wasn't like, should we marry each other, because by that time he was with Jess and I'd been with someone else, and we did a sort of a show just about marriage and weddings and that sort of stage of life, which was a lot of fun. And then this year at Edinburgh I did a 45 my first ever solo 45 minute show, and then next year
Well done,
hopefully an hour.
you. Well done, you.
Yeah,
How
thank you.
successful was that? Was it good?
It was great. I had such a good run. I did three fringe, and I did 2 weeks, which I think was sort of perfect. It was long enough to that it made me a better comedian, but it was short enough that I didn't lose my mind, I think. Yeah.
I don't know how I don't know. I mean, 20 nights is long enough. But
Yeah.
the full 25, that's extraordinary.
It's insanity, and I don't think actually beneficial, those last five, you know. I think
You
almost
just
like, even if you did the full run, but you don't do Sundays or something, I think that's probably quite healthy for people.
are you going up again in 2023?
I think I'm gonna do my hour. Yeah, I've got an idea, and not my finest hour. I do it about all the bad things I've done in my life.
Well, well
But
done you, and I will definitely come and see you this year
oh,
for hours.
please do. Thank you so
Definitely.
much.
Yes,
Yeah.
yeah. I'm so pleased you're going back up there, because we're gonna be busily organizing it all at the start of the new year.
Yeah.
To date, what's been your comedy highlight? Have you got one?
Oh, great question. I did a show in this summer. at Ealing Comedy Festival, in a big outdoor tent. It was a huge, one of the biggest crowds I've ever played to. Probably like 700, 800 people, I think.
Wow.
And it was myself, Neil Delamere. I was
Wow.
comparing.
He's brilliant.
Neil
Being up
Delamere,
here is brilliant.
who's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Justin Morehouse, who was great.
Oh, he's one of my favorites. He's
I
definitely
know. He's
oh.
so
Yeah.
good. He and such
Yeah.
a lovely guy as well.
Yeah. He's one of the nicest people you could meet.
Yeah. And the headliner was my sort of comedy hero, Dylan Moran.
Oh
So
wow, what a bill.
I
There's
know,
not a
honestly.
bad act on that
Oh, thank you.
bill,
Honestly, Richard, I could not believe. Do you know what? And I snaked my way into that job. I'll tell you why.
wow.
I was doing headliners in Chiswick,
Yeah,
and
know it
Simon,
well.
who's promoter, lovely Simon,
Yeah.
was I was there, you know, and he was and I was emceeing for him, and he was chatting away, and he said, "Oh, we've just to his friend," and he said, "Oh, we've just got Dylan Moran for the Ealing Comedy Festival," and I went, "Oh, what? Oh my God, really?" And you know, interjecting basically, and he said, "Yeah," and I said, "Oh my God, he's my absolute favorite." And he said, "Oh well, we haven't got any room on that bill." And I went, "Oh no, I wasn't," which I genuinely wasn't. I was like, I wasn't hinting to you know, to do it. I was just thinking I'll come and watch because I didn't know he was gigging again at the moment. And he said, "Oh yeah." Anyway, the next week he calls me up and he said, "Look, do you want to MC it?" And I was like, "Yes, please." Like,
Wow, how cool is
so
that? That must have
yeah.
been amazing.
It was amazing. Like, and you know, he was really lovely, and I had a great gig as well. You know, like often those big crowds in a big festival like this weekend and stuff, you know, it can be touch and go because it doesn't feel very intimate, or it's
Yeah,
tough as an
I have been
as an
many times and
yeah.
noticed that. Yeah,
Yeah. Like
there are
I'm doing a
some,
set, it's a bit easier, yeah, but
yeah.
crowd work sometimes because you're so far from them, and you know, they don't feel, you know, as close or whatever. It can be difficult, but I had a blinder of a gig, and I yeah, and I got to meet Dylan Moran, and I introduced him onto the stage, you know, and I was so buzzing, you know,
That's
after it. And
fantastic. How cool is that?
you know, the annoying thing is as well, is that like Simon, bless him, like I didn't want to ask Dylan for a photo because I just didn't, you know, he was in his own sort of headspace and all this. And so Simon said, "Oh, I need to get a photo of all the acts." And I knew what he
Wow.
was doing. He was just doing it like for me, I think. But I said, my friend Roddy was in the crowd that night. And I said, "Oh, when I bring Dylan on, you know, when I shake his hand, will you get a photo of me on stage with Dylan, you know?" And Steve Best was there as well, amazing photographer, and I got some great shots and stuff. And Roddy was like, "Yep." And I was texting him, you know, backstage. He was like, "I'm poised and ready with my camera." And I said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I can't believe I'm introducing this man to the stage. You know, he's a comedy hero of mine. He's got, if he's not one of yours already, he will be by tonight. Please welcome Mr. Dylan Moran." And I walked off stage, and he was nowhere to be seen. He'd got lost
No,
and gone in
oh no.
the wrong entrance. And then he sort of ran on and got a laugh because it was quite funny, but I didn't get like the handshake shot of him. So
Oh.
when he came off, I got sort of what like Roddy managed to get one where we were both on stage at the same time. So that I'll take that. That's enough for me.
It reminds me of the Ealing comedy story. I was probably the last person to interview on this blog, on this podcast, Barry Cryer, and he was just
Oh, amazing.
the nicest person. And he was emceeing the Ealing Comedy Festival a couple of years ago, and
Yeah.
headlining on the night was Alan Davis,
Yeah.
and he accidentally introduced him to close the first half instead of the second half. And you could see the banter between the two of them when he knew
Oh,
they were
no.
there. They just joked it
Yeah.
away. It was just the nicest thing to see. And so your
Oh,
story,
yeah.
I feel sorry for you that he wasn't there, but he then came in and it was great.
Yeah, but hey, that's more of a story. That's what we live for as
Yeah.
comedians, you know.
But wonderful stuff. Who are your favorite comedians, past and present? Did you have comedy growing up in the house or anything like this?
Billy Connolly growing up, my dad's Scottish, so
Wow.
Billy Connolly was everywhere. I remember when I broke up with my first boyfriend, you know, when I was like 15, 16, I remember coming into the living room and I was, you know, I was in tears and stuff, and my dad cheered me up, and then we put on a Billy Connolly VHS.
Brilliant, brilliant.
Yeah, I always grew up with, yeah.
His
Oh God, I
incontinence, his incontinence sketch on the Billy and Albert video,
Oh,
still one of the funniest things
ridiculous.
ever,
Yeah.
I would imagine.
It's,
Yeah,
and I
well,
still
I know.
quote it, you know,
Yeah,
all the
yeah.
time.
Yeah, amazing comedian. I saw him twice live. He was extraordinary.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I saw him a
I
couple of
absolutely
times
love him.
before.
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Who else?
Coffee. Well, Dylan Moran, as I say, I remember watching, you know, just sat with my dad one night watching TV, and you know, on Channel 4, it was like Dylan Moran, Monster. And honestly, I'd never even heard of him at this point. And we just watched his hour. You know, we must have come in like 2, 3 minutes in or something. And oh, I was just howling, you know, like I couldn't believe this guy. He was just
He is
absolutely
so good.
incredible.
What I think's brilliant about him is that he can take a word or a line or a sentence and just run with it.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
you are crying with, he's just creating comedy as he's going along. And Ross
Yeah.
Noble is another one who can do that so well. Billy Connolly, and if you've got that art, it's extraordinary. It really
Yeah.
is. It's so good. It's such a good choice. Have
Yeah.
you got any more? There must be loads.
Oh, loads. I mean, Bill Bailey, Part Troll, when I saw that was
Yeah.
incredible, you know.
Mm.
Victoria Wood was brilliant. I
Yeah,
remember
yeah,
when
yeah.
Catherine Ryan, you know, when Catherine Ryan, when I saw her on the Apollo, I thought, oh my God, you know, this
Amazing.
woman's incredible.
Yeah.
So many heroes, really. And whenever anyone asks me this question, I always think, I need to write them more down. I mean, I love David O'Doherty. He's one of my favorites.
Brilliant.
But
Yeah.
like present as well, like, you know, one of my favorite acts at the moment is Josh Pugh. I think he's
Oh,
amazing.
he's
You
superb.
know, I think
He's absolutely superb.
absolutely
Yeah.
brilliant. Yeah.
He's so
He's
funny.
incredible.
He just keeps topping
Oh.
gags. He's so
Yeah.
good. My
Yeah.
first ever gig, first ever show was with my mum and dad and my brother at Scarborough. And we went to see Les
Yeah.
Dawson in 1974. And he was incredible,
Wow.
just
Yeah,
incredible.
I can imagine. Yeah.
And a year later, we saw Tommy Cooper, and then we saw Ken
Wow.
Jeong and the two Ronnies, and it just went on and on and on. And I
Yeah,
thought,
yeah.
I've got to write all these down. So I've got an
Yeah.
enormous spreadsheet with all every act and every venue I've ever seen. And of course, that
That's
became
brilliant.
God. It's
Yeah.
extraordinary. In the 80s, when I first came to London, I went to the Comedy Store, and on the first bill was Richard Morton, Phil Jupitus, Linda Smith, Steve Gribbin, and
Oh.
top of the bill was an act called Charles Fleischer, who nobody had heard of. He was a very visual American comedian,
Yeah.
and he was never heard of again because he went off to do the voice for Roger Rabbit, Steven Spielberg.
No way. Oh my God. That's incredible.
That was amazing. But it's just extraordinary watching all these
Yeah.
amazing people like yourself
Yeah.
do what you do.
I've got to
My
say just quickly as well, just one last person that I absolutely
yeah,
love
please.
is Christy Kush. I don't know if you've seen him.
He's
Have
brilliant.
you
I've
seen
heard of him.
him?
I'm sure I've seen him. Yeah.
I went to see a show in Edinburgh twice, and I was crying, you know. I was just, it's so silly. It's so silly. It's musical. It's so absurd. It was like a breath of fresh air. I think he's, and I don't think he gets the success he deserves. And that's not, you know, that sounds like a dig. I don't mean that at all. I just, I want everybody to experience his show because it just, oh, it, if you get a chance to go and see it, it's a solo show.
I will
definitely
do.
Go.
Definitely. I will make a note of that after this recording. Definitely.
Yeah.
Like me, do you go to a lot of comedy shows as a member of the audience?
I do when I can, but you know, the paradox is that you're always gigging as a
Yeah.
comedian. But I do really try and make time for the ones that I want to see, you know, especially kind of either like really top billing people or, you know, friends and people that I've wanted to see at Edinburgh. I go and see, you know, so I go to Soho Theatre whenever I can, a lot on Tuesdays when it's sort of like my day off.
Yeah.
You know, I went to see Frank Skinner do a work in progress recently, and that was great. And I saw Dylan Moran do a work in progress. And yeah, often I feel like, oh, I've got, you know, Tuesday's my night off, and that's the night that often I'm like, oh, so and so's on at Soho Theatre, I'll go and see that, you know.
As a matter of fact, this podcast is recording in November 22. I am going to the Soho Theatre tomorrow to see Ivo Graham and to see Garrett Millerick. So
yes.
So if you get tickets, I'll see you there.
Yeah. You know what? I saw Ivo's show in Edinburgh, and
he's so good.
Fantastic. He's incredible. He's a brilliant.
What a lovely man. I don't know whether you've seen my, I should have worn it tonight. I have a t-shirt that says Richard Says Laugh on it, right? Which in because he knows I've obviously got a funny laugh. And he got in touch with me at Edinburgh on my phone through social media. And he said, are we likely to meet? Can you give me your schedule? And this went on all week. This was last year. And just before I left, he presented me with this shirt and I put it on and we had a photograph and everything. And a week later, I saw him play Always Be Comedy and I was wearing the shirt. And his entire set was about how he got this for me. He was just wonderful.
That's brilliant.
It was extraordinary. And what a genuinely good bloke and a very, very, very funny comedian. He's so good.
Yeah.
He's so good.
He's a great guy. Yeah.
Would you, if you were on a bill of comedians, would you stay and watch them all if you were on first?
Yeah, I often do, yeah. Unless I have to go somewhere or, you know, sometimes it's just circumstantial where, you know, perhaps you've been gigging for 10 nights in a row or something and sometimes you want to go on first and then just go for dinner with your pal or something just to relax a bit. But no, generally I'll always watch people, yeah.
Because
I love, you know, love comedy, so.
You and me both.
How
have you found online gigs? Have you done many of them as opposed to live gigs? And what do you think the future of comedy is?
I did quite a few in lockdown, actually, yeah. And I think I'm really glad that I did them because I think it kept my momentum up. And when I sort of just basically hit the ground running as soon as lockdown was lifted, you know. I think I don't think it's a good medium for comedy, for stand-up comedy. I had a few people that did gigs with me where they did, which they don't do on stage, they almost did like a character for the Zoom, which I think works really well because it's more of a set piece. I think comedy's too reliant on like being there in person and the atmosphere and the connection between, you know, the audience and the comedian. However, what I will say is I host a gig every month for Dulwich Hamlet Football Club, which is fantastic. In fact, Ivo Graham's headlining the December one, which is always all for charity. And we did one, you know, it was very early. We were one of the first people, I think, to sort of say, oh, well, let's do a Zoom gig. And I was so skeptical. I thought, oh, this is going to be, you know, and I was hosting it online. It was because the people that run it, Matt Arnold, who's fantastic, he's a TV producer, and he realized that there needed to be, you know, certain audience unmuted and kind of certain rules, but the ones that were unmuted had to know not to chat and that sort of thing. And they made a proper sort of like TV intro for it. You know, we had Badil and Skinner, It'll Never Work, as the opening. We didn't know what we were doing, you know. And I had a backdrop up here. I still got the nails nailed in behind me here because I used to put up a fluorescent pink background just to make it a bit showy, you know. And they were brilliant because they were well done. And we had about 1,000 people on the first one. It was mental because I think we just, those first few were so popular because they were at that time period where people were really, you know, craving social contact. And obviously it wasn't in person, but it was live and it felt sort of connected. So yeah, it was.
My view is that during lockdown, thank God they were there. But I totally agree with you, because when they first started, I used to go to the Always Be Comedy one. I'd go to the Happy Mondays with Sean James, and I'd go to the Irish one with Charlotte Regan on a Friday. When they were done well, they were brilliant. But when they first started, there was no audio. So I would just sit there laughing at four walls, and I thought I was going to be taken away because nobody could hear me. But once they got the audio in, they could do the timing and they could chat to the audience. But I'm 100% with you. You cannot beat going out for dinner, having a few beers, and then going to a comedy show, sitting down, because it's all the moment. And you're sitting there and you're thinking, right, make me laugh. And you always, everywhere I go, I just love it. I really do.
Yeah.
I've so much enjoyed talking to you. You've been a fantastic guest, and I wish you so much success.
Well, thank you so much, Richard. Thank you for being such a supporter of the industry. It's so nice.
Well, it's my pleasure. Is there anything else you would like to say before we go? Where can people find you on social media? Have you got any podcasts? Are you doing any writing?
Do you know what? If you follow me, I'm at Alexandra Haddo on Instagram, and I've got a link tree, which is so handy. It's just a little website, like with all, you know, I sort of update it quite regularly with what gigs I've got coming up. So that's probably the easiest way to... You know, or if you like, literally, I never mind if, you know, some people, they follow me on Twitter or something and they'll say, oh, I'm in town this week. Are you gigging anywhere? I'll always just, you know, let people know. So just drop me a message if you ever want to come and see me, basically.
Well, please do continue, because I'm going to be in the front row very, very soon watching you again. I thought your performance at 21 Soho was outstanding. You were absolutely
Thank you
hilarious.
So much. I remember that gig. It was great, actually. Great time.
You were so good that night, and I will come and see you very, very soon. Thank you so
much. Oh, please do. Let's get a beer afterwards.
Definitely. Thank you so much for your time, and all the very best to you.
Thank you, Richard. Cheers.
Thanks. Now, bye bye.